complicated machinery. When they were but 5 years old, their father could find no toy to please them like a puzzle. They are natural mechanics. But the other 8 or 9 boys have different aptitudes. I belong to the latter class. I never had the slightest love for mechanism. On the contrary, I have a sort of abhorrence for complicated machinery. I never had ingenuity enough to whittle a cider tap so it would not leak. I never could make a pen that I could write with, or understand the principle of a steam engine. If a man was to take such a boy as I was and attempt to make a watchmaker of him, the boy might, after an apprenticeship of 5 or 7 years, be able to take apart and put together a watch. But all through life he would be working uphill and seizing every excuse for leaving his work and idling away his time. Watchmaking is repulsive to him. Unless a man enters upon the vocation intended for him by nature and best suited to his peculiar genius, he cannot succeed. I am glad to believe that the majority of persons do find their right vocation. Yet we see many who have mistaken their calling, from the blacksmith up or down to the clergyman. You will see, for instance, that extraordinary linguist, the learned blacksmith, who ought to have been a teacher of languages, and you may have seen lawyers, doctors, and clergymen who were better fitted by nature for the anvil or the lapstone. Select the right location. After securing the right vocation, you must be careful to select the proper location. You may have been cut out for a hotel keeper, and they say it requires a genius to know how to keep a hotel. You might conduct a hotel like clockwork and provide satisfactorily for 500 guests every day. Yet, if you should locate your house in a small village where there is no railroad communication or public travel, the location would be your ruin. It is equally important that you do not commence business where there are already enough to meet all demands in the same occupation. I remember a case which illustrates this subject. When I was in London in 1858, I was passing down Holborn with an English friend and came to the penny shows. They had immense cartoons outside, portraying the wonderful curiosities to be seen all for a penny. Being a little in the show line myself, I said, "Let us go in here." We soon found ourselves in the presence of the illustrious showman, and he proved to be the sharpest man in that line I had ever met. He told us some extraordinary stories in reference to his bearded ladies, his albinos, and his armadillos, which we could hardly believe, but thought it better to believe it than look after the proof. He finally begged to call our attention to some wax statuary, and showed us a lot of the dirtiest and filthiest wax figures imaginable. They looked as if they had not seen water since the deluge. "What is there so wonderful about your statuary?" I asked. "I beg you not to speak so satirically," he replied. "Sir, these are not Madame Tussaud's wax figures, all covered with gilt and tinsel and imitation diamonds, and copied from engravings and photographs. Mine, sir, were taken from life. Whenever you look upon one of those figures, you may consider that you are looking upon the living individual." Glancing casually at them, I saw one labelled Henry VIII, and feeling a little curious upon seeing that it looked like Calvin Edson, the living skeleton, I said, "Do you call that Henry VIII?" He replied, "Certainly, sir. It was taken from life at Hampton Court by special order of His Majesty on such a day." He would have given the hour of the day if I had insisted. I said, "Everybody knows that Henry VIII was a great stout old king, and that figure is lean and lank. What do you say to that?" "Why," he replied, "you would be lean and lank yourself if you sat there as long as he has." There was no resisting such arguments. I said to my English friend, "Let us go out. Do not tell him who I am. I show the white feather, he beats me." He followed us to the door, and seeing the rabble in the street, he called out, "Ladies and gentlemen, I beg to draw your attention to the respectable character of my visitors," pointing to us as we walked away. I called upon him a couple of days afterwards, told him